Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the day after the day after the Thanksgiving holiday. It's Tuesday, the last day of November, November 30th, 2021. I'm Larry Jacobs, and welcome to today's show, Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. All right, it's going to be a good one. We got Jim Harvey, the executive director, who unfortunately, to my way of thinking, not for him, is retiring as a executive director of the National Superintendents Roundtable. But they've joined up with the Schlechte Center. We're going to learn all about that. So the Superintendents Roundtable will continue with a different center, if I may. Okay, we have the president and CEO of that, Steve McCammon, on with us as well. We're going to talk about the merging of the two groups and see how it's going to affect everything, and congratulate Jim in just a few minutes in person on his retirement. He's done enough. He deserves a good one. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. That's ACE-ED.org. That's the American Consortium for Equity and Education, where our magazine, Equity and Access, is located, and all the archives are over there as well for the magazine. Again, ace-ed.org. We'll have a new issue out at the end of the week, just so you know this, okay? The December issue is coming out. All right, and it's a good one, by the way. And we have all our podcasts over there as well, and a link to our new website, which is SEL Today, Social Emotional Learning, SELToday.org. All right, guys, so you can check it all out at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on my two gentlemen guests here today, one from Seattle and the other, I think, down somewhere south. We'll find out, okay? Jim, welcome to the show. Are you retired?
Thank you
yet?
Very much, Larry. It's great talking to you again.
Yeah, it's great having you here, my friend. Are you retired yet? Are you sitting in a hammock in Tahiti right now, or what's going on?
No, actually, I'm sitting in my kitchen, but I'm retiring as of December the 31st. Well,
wow.
I'll continue consulting a little bit with,
you better.
With the Schlechte Center and with the Roundtable, yeah.
You can't,
so I'm looking
you can't
forward
leave.
To retiring.
Yeah, you can't leave. You can't leave in total. Okay, we love you too much. Okay.
Well, when people have left the round table before, they've retired, they've asked me if they could stay associated with it. I've always said we're the Hotel California of associations. You can check out, but you can never leave.
That's funny. That is funny. You'll never leave. I don't know. This may or may not happen. We'll see. So, Steve, are you now in Tahiti on that hammock waiting for Jim? What's going on, Steve McCammon? Hello, I'm Larry. Good to meet you, Steve.
It's very nice to meet you, Larry. I've become
thank
a fan
you,
of your show. I went back
you.
And listened to several shows, and Jim will tell you I won't let him totally retire. One of the great regrets of my career is that I was out in the Seattle area for almost 18 years, and I never connected with Jim.
Wow.
And I found him near his retirement, and so at least I'm really glad to have made the friendship and the association for sure.
That's great. And I think people know about, we'll talk about the whole thing, but tell everybody about the Schlechte Center. Okay. Would you, by the way, everybody, I just want to spell that. That's S-C-H-L-E-C-H-T-Y. I pronounce it Schlechte. Am I right?
You are right, and try having
you,
that at, in your email address.
Okay, yes. It's a hard one.
It's a tough one.
Schlechte Center.
Yeah.
Okay.
We are located in Louisville, Kentucky.
I thought so.
And and we've been here we're in our 35th year of existence, nonprofit, founded by Dr. Philip Schlechte, you know, author of several books and really, really gifted speaker. He founded the center and brought a collection of what I think are talented folks together to help people think about systems and how do we have this aspiration to become, from our viewpoint, learning organizations with a focus on engaging students through thoughtful design. And it's been we've been a small engine that could for 35 years. I came on board 10 years ago, so I left successful superintendency because I believed in the vision and wanted to help carry the legacy forward. So thanks for asking about us.
Oh, you're welcome. Steve, where were you superintendent?
I was superintendent in Fife schools out on the just outside of Tacoma, Washington. out on the I-5 corridor. I was out there for 18 years. The last 13, I was superintendent. And that's where we found the Schlechte Center. We had wanted to get a more clear focus on how we can, update what we were doing instructionally and get a little more clear on engaging students. And we found Phil Schlechte back in 2000. And the work continues in that school district, and its second superintendent removed from myself. It continues. They're doing better work than they ever did when I was there, for sure.
Well, I don't know about that, but I bet you're all doing great work. So, if I may, the Schlechte Center is, help me out here, is really a think tank and a consulting to school districts, a consulting firm on student engagement. Is that the way you want to phrase it? How should we do that?
Yeah, student engagement, and we also help districts think about the capacity needed to become what we, from our viewpoint, a learning organization, less bureaucratic, more focused on. And it's a pretty tall order, and it's a lot of our standards that we use are very aspirational. They're what might it look like if you were truly to think about being less bureaucratic and more focused on the system. And we do have our own superintendent network we've had for 25 years. So we have a lot of experience. We work with superintendents, principals. So we have school board conferences. We work a lot with teachers directly in the classroom and helping them think about this notion of design towards student motivation. So we really work with all the stakeholders in education.
That's really good, and I have to apologize because I've been in this business for a long time, and I did not know you guys until Jim introduced you to me. Okay, so I apologize for that. We would have had you on the show long before this, for goodness sakes. You are running under the radar, I think, and I think I may be too. We didn't connect before this. Okay, so wow.
Well, I'm just glad we've connected. That's the thing.
We have indeed. We have indeed. And one last question before I leave Louisville and head back to rainy old Seattle. How's the bourbon, Steve? How's the bourbon today?
You know, it's pretty good. I didn't fancy myself a bourbon connoisseur until I moved to Louisville. And then,
yeah, exactly.
But it's an industry for sure. And
there's more
to it. And I learned that it can't truly be called a bourbon unless it's made in certain areas, kind of like the wine regions in France, I guess.
There you go. There you go. And one last question. Okay, you ready, Steve? I'm going to say two words to you. Hot brown.
Oh, hot brown. The Brown Hotel. We just had our superintendent conference here in Louisville at the Brown Hotel, and were eager to try it. If you've never had one at the Brown Hotel, I recommend it.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jim?
No.
Okay. I can't explain. Hot brown is one of the great meals you will ever have in your life, especially at the Brown Hotel. And
absolutely.
It started because I think Mr. Brown came back one night pretty drunk 45 years ago and said, have the chef make me up something that'll really fill me because I'm really hungry. And the chef made turkey, toast, cheese, and put everything on this piece of bread and put it in the oven, and it is the most delicious thing you will ever have in your life, a hot brown.
Wow. I've never heard of it before.
Until I went to Louisville, I had never heard of it either, and I'm telling you, I found nirvana. Okay?
Yes.
It was unbelievable. Okay? So when you go visit Steve, have him take you to the Brown Hotel. You can have it other places, but you got to go to the Brown and have a hot brown.
Larry, when I retire, I plan to write a book called Comfort Foods That I Have Eaten, and it's right up there on the top of the list. So.
It's one of the best. I mean, it is really just, I couldn't believe it. Somebody asked when I was there in Louisville a few years ago, somebody said, have you had a hot brown? I said, I never heard of it. And he immediately sent me to the Brown Hotel that night for dinner. And I can't, I'm telling everybody, this is the way to go, all right? All right. Jim, back to education, unfortunately. Jim, okay, what's going on with the superintendent's roundtable, and how do you see it melding into, this has been your life's work, if I may. I know you've done other things, but this is really your life's legacy, okay? And what a legacy it is. And put it into perspective with Schlechte. Jim Harvey, who's going to have his first
sure.
hot brown next time he goes to Louisville.
Yeah. Sure. Well, what's been going on with us, Larry, is we've just completed our 15th year. We started with a planning exercise in 2006, and here we are 15 years later looking at sort of a body of work that's been pretty substantial. We had a wonderful meeting that Steve and his staff attended in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, November 12 to 14, I guess it was, on Education for Democracy, where we had some fabulous speakers and wonderful interchanges amongst the members. And, of course, the big news is that we're merging with Schlechte. And
yeah.
I think that's going to be a wonderful, wonderful partnership. The benefit to us, I think, is, to be honest, I think we're like the husband who says, I worry about the big things. I worry about whether we should join the United Nations and whether we should declare war on China and what our policy should be with respect to the budget. And my wife worries about the little things. She worries about where we live and where the kids go to school. And, you know, obviously that husband has things backwards, because the important stuff is where we live and where the kids go to school. Well, the round table has been sort of a big picture place. It's sort of looking at what's going on in the world, what it means for schools, what's coming down the pike and around the corner for American educators. And, it's relatively easy to speculate about these things, and it's the sort of thing that I particularly enjoyed. And the roundtable members find useful, because it's different from the day-to-day experience. The Schlechte Center, it really worries about how you operate a school district, how you manage a school district, how you deal with the culture of a school district and change the culture of a school district for the benefit of students. So I think this merger potentially offers the best of both worlds, with one group of superintendents in the roundtable worrying about these big picture issues, and another group of superintendents working intensely on improving their own work and improving the work of the district. And I think there are a lot of opportunities for productive exchanges of ideas between the two. And some of our members, obviously, well, not obviously, but I can tell you, some of our members want to also be part of the Schlechte Superintendent's Leadership Network, and some of the Schlechte Superintendent's Leadership Network people are interested in being part of the roundtable too. So it's, I think it's a very productive merger and a very useful merger.
And Steve, do you see it literally as two separate organizations under one umbrella, or do you see it as one organization, let's say not 25 and 25, but 50 superintendents, maybe 500 superintendents working together? How do you see it shaking out from your end? You're the new king. You're the new king.
Yeah. I kind of see it a little bit both ways. Jim described really, really well. When we were approached by an intermediary that said, you know, the roundtable might be looking for a legacy home, they've looked at some other options, and this person mentioned that we might be a good fit because they were also a member of our network. Honestly, I don't know how interested I was in looking at another superintendent group, because we're a pretty focused group. But when I met Jim, and when we responded to their request for proposal, one of the things I said to Jim afterwards was, if you had said to me, we're looking for somebody to just dovetail us into their existing leadership network, we would not have been interested, Larry, because our superintendent leadership network is a learn from field trip based. We go to Costco, we go to Boeing, we go and visit the Equal Justice Center down in Montgomery, and we purposefully keep that.
Is that Brian Stevenson?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. We had a program we did down there. But one of the nice things about
that
group is
he's a magnificent man. Yeah.
Oh, he's incredible. But it's a purposefully small field trip focused, but what I learned about the roundtable was, as Jim said very elegantly, big picture, policy oriented, and I had told him that's appealing to me because look at the significant voice. Now, you said, would we keep them separate? We're absolutely going to keep the branding separate. We're going to keep the philosophies separate. People can come over to either side of the picture as they want. But look at, have we ever needed a time to have 150 to 200 really thoughtful superintendents, the ability to pull a common voice into some conversations where needed is really kind of exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've met
mm-hmm.
the superintendents, a lot of the superintendents at the round table, and when the superintendents in our network meet them, it's they really are kindred spirits, even though they're the focus of our networks is a little bit different. At the end of the day, it's really about the same thing. It's about collegiality, learning together.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a superintendent for a lot of years. I don't
yeah.
think there's ever been a time where superintendents needed support from each other.
Oh, I
had a former colleague who was a principal in my old district. He sent me a thing on LinkedIn, and he just said, hey, with everything that's going on, Steve, I just want to thank you for stepping up in the gap for things we didn't even know when you were superintendent. And honestly, I said to him, you know, but I said, yeah, I stepped up in the gap in 2000 and 2008 when we had the 9/11 and then we had the great financial crisis. But I said, I got to tell you, that was not stepping into the gap like superintendents are stepping into the gap now. They're up against it. And I like the fact that we can be supportive to more superintendents than ever. We believe in the superintendency at the Schlechte Center. We believe the superintendent is the moral and intellectual leader of the enterprise.
Hmm.
And if they don't have the moral integrity and the intellectual, I'm going to continue to learn how to be a better leader, then we are in trouble as a society. And we truly believe that is a critical role in our society. So we're pleased to be able to meet and work with more of them.
I think it's wonderful. And
if I could ask you that, Larry.
Oh, go ahead. Please, Jim. Go ahead. Go.
Yeah. I want to emphasize that our alliance with the Schlechte Center came after 2 years of exploring our options for, you know, what to do with the roundtable when I retired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, having built this thing, I'm interested in leaving it in a good home. And there were a lot of very promising leads, but when we were introduced to the Schlechte Center, which I had heard of and knew about, when we were introduced to them as a possible partner, the minute we began talking to Larry, to Steve and his colleagues, the minute we realized this was the perfect place to be. And you asked, you know, are they going to be two separate organizations, two separate
mm-hmm.
leaders, superintendents groups within the same umbrella? I think they will. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with
yeah.
the roundtable
yeah.
as it
Absolutely.
Moves forward, because I think it'll be quite different. And just to comment on Steve's insights about, you know, the stresses of the superintendency today.
Oh, I want to get into that in detail. Yeah.
We did this survey this past year. The roundtable did this survey this past
oh,
year.
Yeah.
Simply asked superintendents, have you thought of quitting? And the responses were just unbelievable. Superintendents telling us that they needed police details to protect themselves from local citizens, that they'd moved their families out of their homes into more secure
really?
Buildings.
Really? I hadn't
with guards.
Heard that. Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's really been very extremely stressful in this bizarre last couple of 18 months. And 30% of the respondents told us that they had, in fact, thought of quitting. And some of them reported, you know, heart attacks and strokes as reasons for why they did leave. But 80% of them decided they were going to hang in there. So this is a dedicated group of educational professionals.
It really and truly is. And actually, since you brought that up, I was going to wait a few minutes. But since we're on that subject, this has been a horrible year for stress. A horrible 2 years, if I may. First, you had to literally do your job through the pandemic, lead through the pandemic. And then you have the anger issues, if I may, and the highly emotionally charged issues coming out. All right, and I'm curious. I'm gonna ask. I'll start with Steve here. Steve, okay. I'm hearing that high level of emotion has died down a bit, and that now that things, I'm going to use the word normal. I don't know how normal things are, but things are returning a bit to a more normal normal way of life, if I may, for educators. What do you hear in that regard, and especially from your superintendents? So I'll ask Steve that first, then Jim.
I think there's some. I think there's something to what you're saying. I do think, however, you know, as an organization, the, you know, obviously the pandemic was an existential conversation for us.
Oh yeah.
We work with school districts, and if they don't have the means or the capacity for us to even come in on site or deliver work by, via Zoom, we saw the same things. And I think what really hit folks, Larry, I think last year it was with masking and, you know, all the other things, some things even outside of the pandemic. But within the pandemic, obviously there were the political issues that got brought to bear. That's a whole other conversation. But I think that was horrific last year. And the whole idea of trying to convert to remote learning and try to assure some sense of quality and engagement. And I think what this year has been more about is, oh, gosh, we thought we were hitting the other side. And so while there may not be as in some cases, as much in your face, I think there's the stress level is where's the light at the end of the tunnel? And I think that's kind of the emotional thing that folks are dealing with. The other thing, and, you know, this isn't a rocket scientist statement. As a former superintendent and a guy who works with a lot of superintendents,
yeah.
the thing that's heartbreaking to all of us in education is there are so many wonderful things that continue to go on in education, but there was a time when you didn't have parents on TV or on social media feeling like it was okay to attack really caring administrators and teachers who are trying to do good things, and we all worry
right.
about that models for future generations. I think as we look back 5 years, I hope that hasn't done more damage, than some of us think it might, and what that might do to gifted people going into the field. Those are obvious concerns, but I think you're right about it's not as maybe in your face, but I just think there's a obvious stress level and frustration, and we've said at the Schlechte Center we're going to work with those who persevere because they deserve it.
It's interesting what this, and actually Jim and I met through my still good friend Rich Bagan over at, when he was executive director of NSPRA, the Public Relations Association, and you know, one mm-hmm. of the things we've learned from all this is that better communication. Okay, to the community, to your educators, internal and external communications, is a key to quelling this before it begins. Jim, what are your comments on all this? You think it's time tamping down a little bit?
I think it has tamped down a little bit, in part because you know the schools have reopened and the stress on the communities and the stress on families has been somewhat reduced. However, it seems from following sort of the political news, that schools have also become sort of a focal point of elections, and they're likely to be focal point of elections
yeah.
in 2022 and
certainly
2024.
Certainly in Virginia.
Virginia is exhibit number one, where
yeah.
Parental anger about the school closings apparently played quite a part, and also this debate about critical race theory.
Yes,
has been sort of ginned up as something yeah. to attack schools on. So they're still in the middle, I think, of a maelstrom of controversy around these issues. And one of the things that Steve just said rang a bell. We've been hearing from some of our superintendents that they are getting behaviors now from students.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly middle school and high school students. That's off the charts, as you say. And
I just had Thanksgiving with my nephew, who's an elementary school principal in Massachusetts, and he was saying the exact same thing about elementary students. It's off the charts.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
I haven't heard it about elementary school students.
Oh, yeah.
But these superintendents are saying that they see this student behavior as a direct outgrowth and imitation of the behavior that they're seeing from parents. And that's very troubling.
Sure,
and who knows what this is going to look like or what the effects of this are going to be 5 years down the line.
Well, I can tell you one of the effects, okay, in my opinion. All these things, people getting up and screaming at educators, and my nephew, who I just mentioned, said that on Wednesday before Thanksgiving, this is a nice elementary school in a nice town in Massachusetts, they had 150 kids absent out of 450 on Wednesday. Okay? That didn't happen when I was a kid. You went to school on Wednesday, and you were glad for Thanksgiving and the day after. Okay?
Oh, so people are taking long breaks.
People
are
taking longer times, and it's a continuing challenge out there. And what I'm driving at, all right, is that, you know, there are big issues out there, and we know about the big ones. Everybody knows about the masks and the screaming, and they're yelling about social-emotional learning for some stupid reason. And they're yelling about critical race theory, which nobody even understands what the heck's going on with that right now. But I have to tell you, to me, the biggest problem is one that's rarely mentioned outside of our profession, and that's the shortage of future educators and the shortage of future administrators. I'll use my nephew as an example. They went nuts trying to fill every kind of job you could think of at the school. And I'm curious from the superintendent's point of view, and Jim, I'll stick with you, what are you hearing about that? To me, where are we going to get future teachers? Who would go into this profession? Who is it?
Well, the survey we did on have you thought of quitting brought up this very issue, that superintendents are deeply worried about the future of the profession and who's going to enter this profession given the controversy and the abuse and the violent abuse that superintendents have taken in the past 18 months. So they're very worried about that. They're also extremely worried about finding frontline troops, as it were, for bus drivers, janitors, substitutes, and teachers themselves. And the decline, apparently, in the number of people applying for schools of education
It's terrible.
Tells me that people who might contemplate entering the teaching profession or entering the educational profession are looking at the lack of respect for the profession embodied in the statements of many public
exactly
leaders,
my point.
Thinking, I don't need that. So these 40 years of criticism of educators and of the educational system are starting to come home to roost because people are thinking, I don't need that. Why would I need that? And I certainly don't need it if my family's going to be attacked.
Yeah, and I don't need it, and I have to say this, at the rate of pay we're paying them. Okay,
that's
and I'm
right.
going to give
that's
an example.
Right. Yeah.
And this is the same nephew. Okay, his daughter just graduated University of Massachusetts as an English major, and she got a job at a biotech company. Okay, first job out of school in human resources, which she knew nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
And her pay is $60,000 a year.
Right.
Okay.
And in many states,
so who's
going
to go into education for $30,000 a year? That's my question. We have to raise it.
Yeah.
Steve, I'm just screaming here. What are you hearing on all this? Teacher shortage, personnel shortage, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, I saw a quote the other day that, you know, when we were in Chicago at the roundtable conference, the superintendents that were there, I mean, so on one side of the equation, you're hearing what they're going through. But then when you talk about the thing that's most important for them, the importance of education in continuing our precious democracy, the passion is off the charts. And so the quote I saw was, if your path is more difficult, perhaps your purpose is bigger than you think. And I think there are folks out there who will answer the call. I really truly believe that, and
I hope
I think one of the problems we have, Larry, and we were talking to Jim and some of his team about this yesterday. One of the problems is that I think the roundtable and the Superintendent's Leadership Network can help be an aid toward is, we got a lot of issues in education, and it is causing people to think twice about why would I go into that lion's den. But I think it's because we're letting the problem be defined by outside sources, and we need
communication
to say,
Hear, hear.
If there's a problem, let's educate people about education. These are the good things going on. We might have a governance issue. One of the things we're talking to Jim about, we love what the roundtable has done historically with how high the bar and the quitting report and the reports they do that inform educators and do the very thing I just talked about. They bring a voice that says, no, if there's a problem, let's define it in ways that are coming from the field. And one of the things we're exploring is what if the roundtable in conjunction with the Schlechte Center's leadership network, what if we did a report on governance and what that might look like and how do we talk about local control and how do we talk about keeping the focus on the work that educators know they need to do and how do we put these other things in their proper place in their proper context. And I think only those who sit in these really difficult seats, we need to take advantage of what we've learned during the pandemic to be better post-pandemic. And most of the leaders that are worth their salt, they say, we're not going to grumble and complain. It's been tough, but oh my goodness, we've learned some things during these past 2 years that will make us better. We wouldn't want to go through it again, but we have learned some things. And Jim's quitting report, I hope people have read that. The quitting report the roundtable did, what I got out of that was it really did drive home how difficult it's been, but it also shone a light on the passionate leaders who said the work's too important not to continue.
Yeah,
I think that's what I got out of it. Well said, Steve.
And I'll tell you, as one of you guys mentioned before, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Okay, one of you said that, and you know, there is a light, okay. But just to take that analogy a little further, I'm concerned that people think it might be a tunnel, okay. And if we think of education as a tunnel, okay, we've got serious challenges there. I mean, it should be a bright and shining star, heading off into outer space towards the next shining star. You know, we're in tough times. We really got to communicate that out there and get people involved. And I'll tell you what I said before, we got to raise salaries. I mean, it's just that simple. We have to get people. It's too simple out there to take good people, and they're going to have to go where the money is to support themselves. And we got to appreciate the value of educators. And if you do that, you're going to get the best and the brightest to go into it. It's that simple. Who's got the money to make it that simple, right? I know Steve does. Steve has the money, right, Steve?
Steve has this little nonprofit's got all the money in the world.
I'm sure you do. You know, we got about 5 minutes left. This is going to be one of the great questions, okay? You mentioned it before, and I just want to go into it for a second because it raises a whole bunch of issues, Jim, which is critical race theory. I don't even like that phrase, to be perfectly honest. I think I understand what it is. I know it's important to teach history the right way. Okay, I really do. Okay, it's become a touch point, a flash point. And, the details of Jim, do you want to just say a little something? I know you have something to say on this. Jim Harvey.
Sure. Critical theory applies to history. It applies to sociology. It applies to physics and biology. It's looking at an existing body of knowledge and ways of looking at the world and saying, well, is there a different way of looking at this? And so when you come to the racial history of the United States, this critical approach to, well, how have we been dealing with how we've described ourselves? And I think at least two themes are coming together. One is, when I came to this country in 1958, 88% of the students in public school were white. 88%.
Wow.
Today, 48% of the students in public schools are white.
Yeah.
So there's been a dramatic shift in the population within public schools as students of color have low-income students and immigrants have more and more dominated the enrollment in the schools. And the inherited story that we had about ourselves, that this was a country where people came and they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, basically ignored what had been 12% of the population when I came here, but now is the majority of the population, and the racial history of this country. So what happened is that opponents of public schools and opponents of sort of rethinking how we look at our history have taken anything that has to do with equity or dealing with the challenges students of color have in school, anything at all to do with that, and they've labeled it as critical race theory, and argued in public that we are teaching white children to hate their own country. Well, that's not the point.
Yeah, right.
The point isn't to teach anyone to hate their country. The point is to be accurate about the history of the United States, both its wonderful aspects, and I experienced them, and I'm sure you did, Larry, and I'm sure Steve did too, and the flaws, because the truth of the matter is, when I got here, was just 4 years after Brown v. Board of Education.
Right, right.
And the fact is, it was just 4 years after segregation was legally outlawed, or at least outlawed as far as the Supreme Court was concerned. But it took another 20 years to get that put into effect. So this our whole approach to dealing with what I as a Catholic would consider to be the original sin of the United States, namely our racial history. It's festering up now and needs to be dealt with. And critical race theory is used as a sort of a blanket condemnation of anything to do with equity. And I think that's a real challenge. Because as Steve said earlier, the moral purposes of education and the moral and intellectual leadership that's required for superintendents to lead schools properly, that's at the core of what schools are all about.
Yeah, and history, you know, history is... it's how we interpret the past. There's no, the only thing that we know is in 1492, Columbus set foot somewhere in North America.
Right.
Okay, that's simple. The rest of it is interpretation. Okay, and that's what we have to teach these kids. All right, and instead of yelling at it, all they have to do is be able to see for themselves. And believe me, kids aren't stupid. Okay, they will see it themselves if we guide them along. Without it.
Yep.
Steve, your thoughts? But we got about 2 minutes, Steve. Completely control critical race theory, Steve. Good. 2 minutes.
Here's how I can be brief. I'll go back to one thing we talked about earlier was we're letting problems be defined and we're letting people educate about education that are from the outside in. And I think we need more conversations like what Jim just said. We need more forums where we really talk about what it is and what it isn't. I was blessed to be a history teacher when I was a public school teacher.
Me too.
And I thought you seemed like good people. And I'll tell you, when I taught in rural North Florida, and I was an Indiana boy growing up, and I moved down to Florida, and I was told, here's the curriculum. But I also had the latitude to enhance and use and create a curriculum, local control, to teach what needed to be taught and go as deep as it needed to be. And I think we ought to just be about teaching history. And I do think educators need to help take these flash phrases like critical race theory and put those on the table and really talk about what is the history and how do we teach it. There's rich conversations to be had. Jim Harvey would be a great guy to always have leading a conversation.
He's welcome
like
here.
I'm glad we have recorded what he just said. I think he said it really well.
He always says it really well. I'm going to miss you, Jim, but I'm going to picture you drinking that Mai Tai in Tahiti in your bathing suit.
You're a great ally of public schools. Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you, my friend.
Hey, Larry.
We're going to miss you. Steve, go ahead.
When we were together, when Jim and I were together last, I said something to him. First of all, we are going to do a Dr. James Harvey National Superintendent Roundtable Membership Scholarship to ensure that members always know the legacy of Dr. Jim Harvey. One of the things I said in our closing was, people, you know, I'm sure people are looking at me and saying, man, you got some big shoes to fill. And I told Jim in front of the membership, I said, look, I know better than to ever try to fill your shoes, Jim. My hope is to try to walk in your significant footsteps. And I mean try coming in after a Jim Harvey. In my life, I was blessed to have Phil Schlechte say, I'd love for you to take my work forward. And I'm equally as humbled to have Jim Harvey trust me and my team to do the same, truly.
I'm deeply touched, Steve. Thank you.
Well, it's true, Jim. And education's – I know you're still going to be involved, but this is not your eulogy, okay? But you're going to be missed, but I know you're going to still be involved. And you stay in touch with me, and you're welcome here anytime. You know that.
Okay.
Anytime
you
want to spout off and give your philosophy, you are welcome here, my friend. Okay? And, Steve, I'll be in touch with you, and we'll get shows together for both groups, okay? Does that work?
Wonderful. We would look forward to it.
I'll look forward to it, too. All right. This is great, guys. Jim, good luck. This is great. So I'll talk to you again. I know that. But you take care of yourself, okay? Enjoy that Mai Tai. You're welcome. And Steve, you're not going to have any trouble following in this flu. Well, you might. Just drink a couple more bourbons. You'll make it. Okay?
Wash down the hot bourbon.
Right. Be good, guys. Thank you both. Good luck, Jim.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Larry.
Bye.
Bye, Jim.
Oh, you're welcome, Steve. Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, two great organizations coming together. The National Superintendents Roundtable is going in with the Schlechte Center. That's S-C-H-L-E-C-H-T-Y. SchlechteCenter.org. Okay, S-C-H-L-E-C-H-T-Y. Schlechte. Steve McAmmon is the new director of both organizations. It's my good friend Jim Harvey retires, and he will be missed. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org. I'm Larry Jacobs. Hey, thanks for listening.